Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Finn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
You join us for another episode of the Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane. I'm joined once again by my co-host, Brenton Johnson. Welcome, Brenton.
Good to be back, Robert.
Excellent. Well, we've basically seen a lot of news pass through our little RSS feeds of late, I suppose. So there is a lot to cover. We do have an interview afterwards with yourself. And who was it again from Microsoft?
Kara Young. So she's a Azure Black Belt. She sort of goes a bit more into what her role is at Microsoft in the interview. So stay around for that. It's quite interesting. I think it's a bit of a peek around the corner of what's coming and, you know, the stuff that you might not be knowing today, but you'll probably run into in the future once AI takes more and more of a charge on it.
Excellent. All right. So we can wait and hear the Terminator marching towards us in the background there with AI taking over the world. So yeah, lots and lots of interesting news that's out there. And since Brenton probably has kicked things off with this interview, so what do you reckon is the big ticket item that we need to let people know this week?
Well, what's been stickied in MSP world, maybe we should get rid of the big tire fire, exciting, extravagant, you know, blown out of proportion, the world is ending, Microsoft partner network changes. So Microsoft's made a number of changes to the way that software in their, I suppose, in their action pack and competencies is used or how it can be used. So at the moment, you can't go out and roll it out for a customer. So it's called an internal use right for that reason. You can use it in your own business, but you can't go out to a customer and use it. What's changing is that internal use right will be not for production use. And I can see why these changes are being made. There's a very fine line, I think. I was talking to Robert before about, you know, if you run a Ubiquiti controller up in Azure, you're using that to create profit, but then maybe give that away for free because you get money somewhere else. So is that a commercial thing? So this is going to really clarify that. They're for demo and testing purposes only, the new licenses and credits. And there's a few other small changes that Robert will probably go into, but that's the main thing that's got everyone up in arms this week. But it was interesting reflecting in the patron group the sort of attitude there compared to, say, Reddit and other places, the internet. How did you find the response in the patron group, Robert?
Well, I think, again, there are the two major changes. So the one you mentioned is the IUR. So it means that people who have been using things like Action Pack and competency licenses, as you mentioned, can no longer technically use those licenses inside their business for production purposes. Now, this is coming into effect in July 2020. So most people have got a year to look at that and maybe buy commercial licenses. And the other one was also the fact that with things like Action Pack, you get a number of free support instances. That has been changed so that you can now no longer use Action Pack support instances for on-prem issues. You can only use them for cloud-based issues. And again, I think that we are seeing that you know, Microsoft is changing its program to suit itself. It's a business. It's looking, obviously, at the back end, how many partners, what they're doing with the products. I think that what we're seeing is those partners who are generally you know, moved to the cloud or looking at modern desktop or getting away from traditional on-prem servers don't have a huge issue with this. Again, it is a lot of money. They may look at, I said, cancelling a subscription and using that payment that they paid for competencies to actually buy the licenses they want, mix and match, things like F1, Microsoft 365 Business, which aren't in the licensing. And again, it's probably based more on the fact that they're not so focused on on-prem as a lot of people. I think the big impact is firstly those who, like I said, have most of their technology or are still very focused on on-prem servers, domain controllers, on-prem SQL, all that sort of stuff. And also the larger MSPs, so people who probably have, you know, 10 or more techs or a number of large server install farm, something in a data center. I think they're the ones that are going to be more impacted. It's certainly across the board. There's lots of opinions from lots of people. But again, at the end of the day, it is Microsoft providing this as an option. And again, many people do pay for competencies, but if it doesn't suit your needs anymore, then you, again, need to reevaluate that. So again, I think there is, I suppose, a bit on either side. Again, it's a matter of what's the middle ground here. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens once the dust settles. And again, whether Microsoft takes on board what it hears, where, again, I think a week or so away from Microsoft Inspire, the big partner conference. And I'm sure a lot of partners there will be letting Microsoft know loud and clear. So let's see what happens after that. What else? What are you hearing out there, Brenton?
Look, I wouldn't be surprised if they reverse some of this decision, Robert. But yeah, we'll just see, I think. I think it's going to be, we'll just take every day as it comes and we'll just have a look at what the partners say. I think smaller partners are probably going to be more affected than bigger partners in some ways because they're less able to pay for it. Or maybe they're not used to paying for software because everyone just gives them everything for free. But, you know, Zig Ziglar said, you know, you got to buy it and you got to use it, or you don't really sell it properly. So that's all right. Maybe I should listen to him. Anyway, let's keep moving, Robert. Next thing.
What okay, have we so got why here? Don't we talk basically about some of the roundups that we've seen? So we've seen a blog post come out on the roundup of some new stuff in OneDrive for Business. Now I've got to admit again. This product's certainly on a tear. It's amazing the amount of stuff that are rolling in. The big plus, especially for me, is the ability to do, again, external sharing, but also now to synchronize, to use the OneDrive sync client to actually pull from other tenants. So at the moment, I've got two or three independent tenants all synced up using OneDrive for Business Sync to my desktop. That's really handy when you work in the B2B environment. You're working somebody else's tenant. So that's really, really handy. We've also got the ability now to put in a password. So when we share a file anonymously, we just send a link out. We can also now put a password on that. Use that really well as well. Just recently with someone worked without a hitch. So I've got to say the OneDrive for Business stuff, where it's come from, even in the last 1 year, 2 years is amazing how much this product has improved from, again, a number of years ago. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, it's chalk and cheese, Robert. It's come so far. You know, it's very closely aligning itself to the Dropbox value proposition as well. So Dropbox has released a number of these things like the Delta Sync, which was a really big announcement a while back. I think around the SharePoint conference time and a few other things that it's released. And a lot of these things in the blog post, passwords on attachments, those sorts of things have all been in Dropbox. So it's interesting to see Microsoft be so close to Dropbox now. I think, you know, especially with that syncing between two tenants, that's one of the things that Dropbox does particularly well. You share a folder and then two people can work on the same folder. But now Microsoft's saying, well, you can do that now with us. So where's the use case for Dropbox going? It's making it pretty hard on them. And then, you know, on the Dropbox side, we're seeing some interesting things happening over there, which I can't talk about because I'm a partner and, you know, I'll get in trouble probably. But they're doing some quite interesting things that look very Microsoft-y, I'll put it that way. So yeah, I like it. I like this sort of thing because it gives people choice. I'm using OneDrive now and I love it. It just works really well. Just syncs all the time. All the grumbles of 2 years ago when it was just a nightmare of a thing with the syncing and all of that's gone. As long as you're running modern software, i.e. Windows 10, like you should, and the latest OneDrive sync client, it just works. Like,
Well, one of the other interesting things about that is, which you may not appreciate, is the actual OneDrive Sync client, the code there, Microsoft is making that available to other providers. So
yeah,
if
cool.
you, again, were a third party and you wanted to be able to sync files to a desktop or use as part of your application, you can use what Microsoft's created freely by the look of it, you know, my understanding. And again, it's probably another way that Microsoft can make sure that it's the dominant player by potentially setting the standard. And I think, you know, OneDrive for Business Sync client, again, has moved, you know, improved so much. And when you look at it integrated with Windows 10 files on demand, I agree with you. I think that it's a big step up and it's really, really works well. And again, people, if you've over the years turned away from it, which is totally understandable, but I'd certainly make sure that you have a look at it now because it's, you know, pretty rock solid. And again, it gives you all the functionality that you need, works really well. I use it every day across multiple devices and find out that it would be something I'd certainly recommend to anybody now. Now, we need to move along a bit. So another one I liked was this questions and answers in Yammer. Now, I know we seem to be talking about things that are a bit controversial today. So Yammer is yet another controversial thing in the grand scheme of things. Not many people generally like Yammer, but it has a big install base. But one of the things they've added to Yammer is the ability for someone to ask a question and then obviously for a certain response to be marked as the answer and all that sort of stuff. So again, I think this is another little improvement that will make a lot of sense to people who use these collaboration tools for finding information or asking for help from others. Again, we'll see it coming to Yammer. It's also really good, I think, also in the live event. So if you use Stream to broadcast a live event, you can then use Yammer to ask questions and answer questions from the audience. So again, another little add-on to Yammer, but I think that's an important add-on there.
If you think about enterprise social network, that was the biggest thing in 2014. Everyone was going to have a social, network in their enterprise and blah blah blah, and it never really flew, and it all fell off the radar. And I think that's because people were so used to email back then and not having that online collaboration and really getting used to it. And then Teams come out, and Teams does a great job of that small group collaboration stuff, but you still need that enterprise-wide stuff. And it looks like Microsoft hasn't forgotten about it, you know. They did acquire Yammer and sort of click it into the Office 365 suite, whereas Teams was a ground up build from Microsoft. So it's a little bit more polished from that point. But yeah, I think it's good. I think, you know, Yammer is not dead. I think Yammer will be around for a while. It's good to see that they're still investing in it, even if it is only for those sort of larger companies that can't do what they need to do in Teams. Or, you know, need these specific things like question and answers in Yammer or whatever else.
Yeah, I think, again, it's a number of tools that are available for you to do collaboration. Some of them make sense, maybe not all of them make sense, but I like to look at Yammer as a group-wide dedicated chat channel. So Teams is chat and files, typically within a specific group of people, whereas Yammer, I think, goes well across the organization for things like, you know, what's happening today, what are we doing for lunch, or where's the employee manual, those sort of things. So another little add-on to Yammer, and I agree with you. I think that Yammer has its place to fill along with all the other tools. It may not make sense in every business, but again, it's a tool that you get with Office Microsoft 365 that you can add in and utilize for many different purposes. What else have we got here? Brenton, what grabs your attention?
Oh, I think you've got a good here. The last blog post in the top 10 actions to secure your environment. So that was released June 4th. So there's been a 10-step series, and they walk you through in quite well thought out, easy to understand steps in 10 things you can do to secure your environment. So this one that you've linked here is detecting and investigating security incidents. So Robert's also got a good blog post he's put up recently around tracking failed logins with cloud app security and a few things like that. So yeah, if you're interested in this space, this is a really good one to get your head around the concepts behind everything. How did you find this blog post, Robert?
I think that you again, the security things generally tend to jump out at me when I'm looking through my feeds, but I think that if you do look at it, Microsoft does provide a really good products to secure environments and bolt on and give you functionality, but it also does provide a lot of details on how to set these up and configure them and where they make sense and how to use them. Again, we need to see people spend a bit more time and dedication learning these products and working out how they work properly. And that was the reason I created that blog post of mine, to basically say that strong recommendation is you get cloud app security inside your tenant, and then you can use it to not only use the inbuilt rules, but you can also use it to create your own rules. The new rule that I created was basically one that would tell me when a failed login outside my corporate IP address has happened. So when someone's trying to log in from China, the US, Italy, Russia, I would get notification. And then again, you can take that a step further and kick off things like Flow as well. So it's an indication of the power of the tools and what can be done. And again, put this in to boost your security levels. Lots and lots of tools, things from the Secure Score to DLP to all sorts of these things that are available. People just need to go in and implement them and use them to their fullest extent. And cloud app security for me is one of the must-haves. But this 10-part series is worth reviewing because it does go through a lot of the products and speaks to how they should be implemented, where they make sense inside a business. So again, a recommendation that most people, I think, who are looking after the security of organizations, you know, spend a bit of time and work through these links. And again, one of the most important things is, okay, in the worst case, if something does happen, then how do we deal with it? What's the procedure? Who have we got to let know? Where do we document it? All that sort of stuff. It may seem trivial, but again, when it happens, you don't want to be worrying about, okay, what do we need to do? You want all the steps worked out beforehand to make your life much easier and allow you to respond to this again much quicker.
We've all seen the IT pro sitting there trying to make a desperate backup of the old NAS because two of the hard drives have failed and one more fails, he's in trouble, you know, these sorts of dramas. So yeah, but back to the blog post that you put up here about tracking failed logins. I think one of the things that we don't do a great job of in the industry is really honing in that importance of detection. So I think the average breach hangs around for about, or the average hackers in the system for 180 days before they're found. So, you know, you can't really do anything. You can't start any sort of incident response or do anything until you detect something's wrong. So having things like cloud app security are going to give you a bit more visibility. And I think we focus very much on protect and not enough on detect sometimes. So we'll put in all these things, but, you know, what if the hacker's in the background or, you know, but we've seen a sustained attack on an admin login. Well, that's interesting. You know, how are you going to detect these anomalies? Because you're probably not going to be able to find it otherwise. So these sorts of things. And like out of the box, it's pretty easy, isn't it, Robert? Like to connect Office 365, it's like a one button click and it configures it. And then you just set up all your policies.
Yeah, and that's a good thing about it. The integration, you can integrate it with Windows Defender. It integrates with the logs. It integrates a lot of other stuff. So, again, worth investigating, having a look, gives you lots of information, day-to-day operations, as well as security ones as well. So we'll put all the links in the show notes for you. What else have we got in here that we can probably mention before we get on to our interview? There was one that you saw here about the discount for CSP partners around Azure in October. Anything in there that you want to let people know about?
Oh, it's just more of an alignment with the US dollar thing to try and make it pretty standard across the world. So yeah, it's a nice little bonus for people selling Azure too. So I thought I'll slip that one in there because of the pitchforks of our first story. I thought I might try and round them out with a bit of a good news story towards the end.
Excellent. All right, we'll see how we go. The other one I've got here is that Microsoft is announced the first Microsoft Cloud regions in the Middle East. So more data centers being spun up with Microsoft. So again, we had the recent ones in Africa, more in Europe, and now some in the Middle East. So these data centers are basically popping up everywhere to allow people to store their data, obviously all their photos, all that sort of stuff that happens basically along the way as well. But again, it just shows you the growth in the cloud with all this stuff that is opening up all these resources, all these abilities that are becoming cloud-based. And again, Microsoft, good to see Microsoft, and I'm sure other cloud providers investing in this to give you that sort of ability. And again, all on a subscription basis. So again, some interesting information. I'll put the link in the show notes for you. I think we've covered just about everything that is current news to keep people up to date. Is there anything else that we need to let people know before we spin off to your interview?
No, one last thing, that the new version of Outlook web app, or, you know, the online version of Outlook, is now going to become the old one. The toggle is going to be removed, and if you remove that with PowerShell, then everyone's getting upgraded to the new and they won't even know what hit them. So there's some really cool stuff. I'll link to the blog post in the show notes there. But like, I've seen the gradual evolution. I think one of my favorite features out of this is the snooze button. There's a snooze button now. I believe you can just say, okay, don't email me for things, similar how it works on the mobile app, which I use quite a bit on the mobile app, so I'm pretty happy about that. Calendar search, you know, quickly creating the events. I created an event on there the other day, and a lot of it is far superior to the desktop experience as far as the interface and how it works. It's not sort of held back by that legacy. It's got to look the same as it did in 1997. High Outlook, we can't change it too much or there'll be a revolt, because it certainly would be if Microsoft would dare ever change Outlook too much. But yeah, in the web app, it's fantastic. And for frontline workers, this is where they live and die. And if Outlook ever plays up, I send people in there and they can do things and they don't really complain. They really like it. So if you haven't gone in there and checked it out, check it out. Did you have any thoughts on that one, Robert?
Yeah, so I try and, again, get the both experience. If I'm traveling, I tend to use, we'll use Outlook on the web. I haven't set up Outlook on my device that I take around with me when I do traveling and presenting, so I live the dream. That way, I think it works quite well. Again, there is obviously the concept of having to be online to do that, but I've never really had a major issue. Again, you've always got your phone as a backup as well, but I found that it works really, really well. There's a couple of things that it would be nice that the desktop doesn't do, that the desktop does do. Things like certificates have been a bit of a challenge. We should see that hopefully improve as well. So there's some minor bits and pieces, but again, I think for the vast majority of users, the Outlook on the web is a pretty much a seamless experience to what they're seeing on their desktop as well. It gives them full functionality, easy to use. And remember that all the latest releases come to the web before they come to the desktop or anywhere else, because it's easy for Microsoft to push it out there directly. So again, as with things like Cloud App Security, OneDrive, Sync Client, go in, have a look at this stuff. If you haven't visited it for a while, make sure that you keep up to date with some of these things. If you don't use them every day, go in and have a look and see the direction Microsoft's taking and what their focus is on going forward. I think that's important, especially if you've got to support the product, because there will be people out there who like the web and some people who obviously will continue to like the desktop. And again, if you're an IT pro, then you're going to have to support them all. So there's the challenge. So I think with that, why don't you set us up for this interview? But before we do that, probably the best thing to do is to let people know how they can get in contact with us. Again, you can follow at N2K Podcast on Twitter and on Facebook. Send us an old world email, feedback@needtoknow.cloud. So that's needtoknow.cloud. And again, I am at Director CIA on the Twitters, and young Brenton over there is at Contact Brenton. So why don't you set up this interview for us? Let us know what was your thinking behind it, what we can expect to hear from Sarah.
Yeah, so I met Sarah at the Microsoft conference, just hanging around with the MVP stands or the Microsoft staff stands, and I was having a chat to her about security and sort of what sort of skills you need in security. And she's talking about Microsoft Cloud App Security and a few other Azure security, a few things that she was doing over there. So I said, oh, you want to be on the podcast? She said, yes. Then I rang her up a few months later to organize it. And she said, hey, I've just been given this thing, Azure Sentinel. And I said, oh, I've never heard of it. So she said, oh, you're in for a treat. So I said, okay, so let's do it on that. So she got the nod from Microsoft. You know, they sat in the interview and made sure that everything was right and that she wasn't exposing anything because it's still in early release. It's not generally available yet. And she didn't have pricing details for us, yes. But she's, yeah, we had to do a little bit of editing to cut some confidential stuff out. But she was pretty generous, so she let a lot go. So hopefully you get a lot out of it. So let's hear from Sarah Young.
I'm here with Sarah Young from Microsoft. I won't tell you what Sarah does. I think Sarah's the best person to speak to when it comes to that. So, Sarah, what do you do at Microsoft?
Okay, so my official job title is Azure Cloud Security and Compliance Global Black Belt. Now, that's a real mouthful, but you can replace the word Global Black Belt with specialist, and that's a fairly accurate description of what I do. I spend time with customers explaining how we do Azure security, and that's in terms of both our products and good practices in general for securing the cloud, and leading on from that, how they can meet compliance and regulatory requirements using our tools and in the cloud.
Oh, excellent. And so what sort of background did you have to get a job like that?
So I've worked in security for the past 6-7 years. I've worked as a consultant, and I've also worked as an internal architect as well. So I've done a variety of different roles. So I've sat on both sides of the fence. So I do understand the challenges from an internal business side, because it's very easy for a consultant or someone third party or a vendor to come into a business and tell you what best practice is and how you should do things. But we know that in reality, it's usually never that straightforward. And before that, before I moved into security, I was a network and infrastructure engineer. So I used to do a lot of racking and stacking, which of course nobody does anymore. And I would go and install routers, switches, firewalls, and actually go and configure those often on site. So yeah, that's my background.
Oh, that's great. Oh, thanks for sharing, Sarah. Let's get started. Now, you said you're in the Azure security stack. I heard that you're an expert on Azure Sentinel, which is a product that I wasn't very familiar with before I spoke to you. So I was very interested in what it is and how it works, and if you can give us a bit of background on that.
Sure. So Azure Sentinel was announced at the RSA conference at the beginning of March in San Francisco. It's currently in public preview, and everybody should be able to get at it in the Azure subscription. It's the first SIEM that's been natively built within a public cloud platform.
So what is a SIEM? Why would you even have one? What's the point of having
management? Because I said that very poorly before, just in case people didn't pick that up. What it is it's a product that will look across all of your different, all of the different tools in your enterprise. So it should be looking at your firewall, your network. It should be looking at your applications, at whatever kind of directory services you're using. If you're using the cloud, it should look in there. And what it does is it correlates all these different events and logs together, and it will look to see if it can detect possible security events. Because we know that if somebody is going through your environment, that they're probably going to leave some traces along the way. And the idea is that the SIEM system will pick up on unusual looking events that aren't, you know, the normal course of the operation of your environment, and alert you to that aren't, you know, the normal course of the operation of your environment and alert you to them. So a security analyst or someone who takes that security analyst role in your business can investigate to see if there's something going on. Because of course we know that this is a risk for everybody nowadays.
Yeah. So this is really around that detection piece. So we know from the research that most people don't find a bad actor on their network till like 200 days in. This is one of those tools that can help with that sort of a problem. Would that be right, Sarah?
Yes, that's right. That's the idea behind it, is that it will help detect any bad actor quicker rather than if you didn't have any tool like that. Because, of course, because our environments are getting so complicated, because it can be really difficult for a human to actually pull all, not that we don't have some great security analysts and not that people, you know, aren't very skilled. It's just getting to the point where environments are so complicated with cloud, with bring your own device, with Internet of Things, that it's really hard for a person to put these things together to actually say, hey, all of these anomalies actually might be related, and it might suggest there's something untoward going on.
With the risk of sounding cliche, a single pane of glass.
Yes, it is very cliche, I know. And it is a single pane of glass is very difficult to achieve. But Sentinel does really, really help with that. It's cloud native. It has a lot of, it natively integrates with things within Azure, but it will also natively integrate with things on premise and in other clouds. So the idea is that you can pretty much ingest everything into it, and so you can, you know, get very, very close to that single pane of glass.
Yeah, that's excellent. We've spoken on the podcast before around MCAS, or Microsoft Cloud App Security. Keep off the acronyms myself. I've met quite a few people at Microsoft that were very, very positive about that product and what it does. How does something like MCAS compare to Sentinel, in your opinion?
Okay, yeah, it's a really good question, because and I get that a lot, and not just with MCAS either. People will say, well, I already have this security product, so why would I need Sentinel on top of that? So Sentinel actually aggregates from lots of different sources. So MCAS is one of those sources. Some of the other things it can take from is like Azure AD, Windows Defender ATP, any EDR solution that someone has. It takes from Azure Security Center. And it can go for, and also, you know, anything in users, applications, servers, network appliances. Obviously, I can't name everything here because, like I said previously, it can take pretty much any log source going. So we'd be here for a long time if I was started listing them all. But the idea is that it brings all of those together, because something like MCAS is just looking at one specific thing, and that's really useful. But Sentinel will take what MCAS gathers plus other sources in order to get that. That's kind of the difference. And also across the top of that, it can also do automation. So you can automate some kind of alert, or you can also do automated remediation with it, which is, again, for security operations is very important, because we know with any kind of incident management, not just security, that the first thing you do when an incident's been detected is you try and contain it as quickly as possible. So any kind of automated remediation that we can do is really, really helpful. And that's something that Sentinel does as well.
Yeah, that's excellent. Thank you, Sarah. So a lot of our listeners are in small to medium businesses. Some are working with 20-seat customers. Some are working with 200-seat customers. Some are internal IT people in that size business. How do you think Azure Sentinel comes, you know, scales down to an environment like that? Because if you think traditionally about a SIEM is, we'll pay, you know, a couple of guys to watch a monitor, and that's their job. Like, you know, the whole job is just to watch the SIEM. So we don't have that sort of resources. Usually we have one or two IT people who have to, you know, you usually have one tech per 200 people or something like that. So where do you see a good place for Sentinel in that sort of an environment?
Oh, well, one of the great things about Sentinel is that it's, that it's because it's cloud native and it just scales up and scales down as people require it, it means that you don't have to build any infrastructure in your environment. A traditional SIEM, you would have to go and install equipment. And that was quite an investment. Time people to run infrastructure, whereas with Sentinel it's fully cloud native. You can just activate it in your Azure subscription, and it will scale up and scale down as you choose to ingest logs into it. So it works pretty well for small businesses because there's no kind of upfront commitment. So if a smaller business doesn't have very many logs to put into it, then that's fine. Like, they're not going to have to build this big infrastructure on premise or commit to any big infrastructure, which I think is one of the great things about it. The other thing is that Sentinel's kind of ethos is trying to make and using a SIEM very, very straightforward. Traditionally, SIEM systems were quite difficult to use. They required, as you said, someone to look at the infrastructure, and also somebody to actually run it and record it and actually do things with it. The idea is that if it's a smaller business, and I think it's likely in a smaller business, someone probably does security operations as part of their job. It's not even their dedicated role. So we want to make Sentinel really, really easy for people. So we have a GitHub that's got a lot of queries and detections that people can use from the word go. And we have a lot of out-of-the-box functionality that means someone should be able to get up and running with Sentinel very, very quickly, as opposed to a traditional SIEM where it could take you a number of weeks or even months to get it doing something meaningful. So I think that's great for everybody because, of course, with security, it doesn't matter if you're a small business or a large business. Nobody has enough resource to do it, because we know there's a skill shortage. So reducing monotonous but obviously important admin tasks is really important, no matter what size of business you are. So yeah, the idea is someone can get up and run Sentinel real quick, and especially for a smaller business that may not have been able to invest in a SIEM system before, I think it should be very accessible for them.
Yeah, that's great, Sarah. So I've got a couple of questions around, say, use case. So we have IT providers. My business is an IT provider or managed service provider. I look after about 50 Office 365 tenants. I have all my customers on Office 365. It's non-negotiable for me. Now, some of those customers are quite small, and you know, it wouldn't make sense rolling out Sentinel just for their Office 365. Is there a possibility to connect multiple Office 365 instances into Azure Sentinel, or is it?
No, not at the moment. It does a one-to-one mapping. But what's great about the Office 365 data connection is that it's entirely free to import your data. So we really have a concept if they're wanting to try out Sentinel for themselves.
Yeah, that's great. Because it's not leaving Office 365. You don't have to pay the ingest or whatever fees. All right. So any tips for getting started around, what do you see as a best use case for Azure Sentinel, apart from, say, that Office 365 that you just spoke about?
Sentinel is what it is. It's security event monitoring. So, we would recommend nowadays any company, it's good security practice to have some kind of security event detection in your environment. So, of course, if you don't have one, if it's not something someone's been able to invest in before, then I think that's a really good use case. We also find that some customers, when moving to the cloud, their on-premise SIEM is difficult to integrate with the cloud as well. So I think they're the two main use cases, if someone's never had one before, or if they're finding that their on-prem SIEM is difficult to integrate into a cloud environment. They're usually the definitely people who should be having a look at Sentinel and seeing if it would work for them.
All right. Well, thanks for that, Sarah. Can you share any information around pricing at this stage?
Unfortunately not, because Sentinel is in a public preview. We don't announce pricing, so watch this space. I'm sure it will be coming in the future. But remember, of course, that there are a couple of, if you're using Azure Sentinel, it does use a log analytics workspace. So if you're already using log analytics, that's great. But if you want to have a play around with Sentinel, you do need to set up one of those as well. And there are a few charges associated with that. But the Azure Sentinel pricing and licensing, how it's going to work, should be announced, fairly shortly. So yeah, watch this space.
Yeah, I remember when we were booking the meeting and you're like, oh, I hope I can have pricing by then. I'm like, yeah, okay, fingers crossed, but not yet.
Not yet. It is being worked on as a priority, I'm told. But yeah, I was hoping we would have it by now, but unfortunately not.
That's okay. And just before we go, I was just wondering if there's anything that really stands out for you that you think people, it's either underloved or underappreciated or just something you absolutely adore?
Oh, well, I think the product that I think doesn't get enough love is Azure Security Center. So I spend quite a lot of time talking about this one too. So Azure Security Center in its basic form is free to anybody who has an Azure tenancy. So you've got no reason not to use it. What it does is it's just, you'll find it in your you'll find it in your portal toolbar just above billing. So I don't know if that's why people avoid it, but it is a tool that's natively integrated into Azure. It will provide infrastructure hygiene and recommendations. It also helps with compliance. And it's a really neat little tool. It has a lot of other features in the standard version, which again help you to secure your environment. So we do just-in-time virtual machine access. We do application whitelisting. It can also do threat protection, and it can be installed in other clouds and on-premise as well to again help you achieve that single pane of glass looking at your threat protection for and security hygiene recommendations for your infrastructure side of things. And I don't think it gets enough love. I think it's a really cool little product. And as I said, if you're using Azure it's already there. So please, you just need to go turn it on, and it's already installed in all of your stuff that's been configured in Azure. So you definitely should go use it, because I think it's just people don't know it's there sometimes. So
I'll chalk it up to a hidden gem, Sarah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's all we need to talk about today. If people want to talk about or find out more about Azure Sentinel, what do you reckon the best resource it is for them to look at?
And the best thing to do, I know, kind of a cop out, is go on our website, because we do have a whole page dedicated to Azure Sentinel. We've got documentation about how you can get started with it, and it's very straightforward to set up. It should only take you half an hour, if that. And as time goes on, since it was announced, we've got a lot of different articles about the various different things you can do with it. We have a GitHub that has queries and detections that have been written by experts that you can just copy and paste in. So even if you don't know a lot about how to use a SIEM, you can. We have a lot of resources online that you'll be able to use to get yourself up and running with that.
Thank you very much, Sarah. That's really great. I think today's been really good for all our listeners. Very often we're getting bombarded with all these latest threats, but there's not a lot of help out there to really, how do we navigate some of these technologies that were traditionally enterprise, but are now getting built in a way that scale down to a small business. Office 365 is a classic example of that. It scales up and it scales down. You can have it for one user. You can have it for one user. You can have it for
you know, a million users. It's completely up to you. So I'd like to thank you for being on the podcast, Sarah. And if you ever want to come back, let us know. If you got a new exciting security product or security thing you'd like to speak about, we'd love to have you back.
Awesome. Thanks very much for having me.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.